Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people are warming up to the idea that perhaps celestial beings have been influencing the history of Earth since there was a history of Earth. And in my humble opinion, one man who knows more about that virtually than anyone is our guest of honor every program. Once again, it's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi there, D-Man.
Another day in paradise, and listeners, we welcome your email questions and comments. Hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. There's an icon at the top of the homepage. And Michael, where do we start tonight?
Well, you know, we can start from the base information that I got this morning, and it seems to be a little bit of guidance. Apparently, there's some perhaps preparedness that may need to be done by people. It was interesting because, as you know, as the audience may know, follow the show, I do receive quite regularly visions and dreams, but primarily visions. In other words, I'm pretty much wide awake when I receive them. And as I view them, they usually are interactive most of the time, about 90% of the time. It's more than just like watching a television program. It's interactive. I can zoom in. One thing I can't do, however, is rewind. It just seems that if I want a closer view, I can get a closer view, but I can't rewind it back, let's say, to what previously played. So it does go past me in an interactive. This is part of what would be classified as a type of Urantia vision that is something to do with having a above physical interface. It's somewhat spiritual, but yet it functions with a physical basis. And some people have pointed out to me that it could be or is related to a gland within my mind, and that's something that was pointed out to me by Nella, who said that they've made changes in my brain, deep inside of my brain, that makes these things possible. But what happened was this morning was just a simple, relatively simple image of a jug, but a plastic, I guess you might say plastic, which is unusual, clear jug, you know, like those milk jugs aren't clear. They kind of have a little bit of a rough texture, so they don't have that crystal clear look. But this had a crystal clear look. It just sat there, just looking at it, and kind of looked at it around and around. And I noticed that I asked them, what are you trying to show me? And they said, just pure, clean water, potable water, that is also portable. In other words, you know, you can take it with you. You can grab it quick, and you know, a lot of those bottles that we have today they don't have handles on them. But this one definitely did, and it was very clear as far as looking at it. As you know, it wasn't something that gave me an image it was dirty water. Gave me the image it was very pure water. So I would say, you know, if it's bottled water, make sure it's luggable, have it around. And it seems to be simple things like this. So there's some direction going on in terms of readiness. Not sure why, but if, you know, they're have it available, then have it available. And then it followed up with another interesting move toward another image of a relatively empty conveyor belt. Upon that conveyor belt, it was moving. At the end of the conveyor belt, there were people lined up on one side. And along down the conveyor belt moved some packaged products, about the size of candy bars. And it was very sparse. And maybe it amounted to maybe two pieces per person. So I was thinking, you know, why the heavy-duty conveyor belt? What does that tell me? What are they trying to relate to me? And just a vision, because they're using a vision relatively than an audible voice, which can be quite frightening. And it ended up giving me the idea that the supply chain will be somewhat, it could be directed towards me, because I'm in Hawaii, and in Hawaii, and if the ships stop coming, we kind of lose a lot of our produce and, you know, things coming by way of, you know, the ships, because that's our primary mode of importing goods, and especially in this case, it's looking at base needs like food. So that was shown, and that was just about it. That's the couple of things. So it was simple, sort of like a warning or guidance. And I do have water available, but I don't have it available in luggable containers. I have literally, 55-gallon drums of water laying around the house, which I, you know, these barrels that were empty, so they were, you know, holding chlorine to, at one time, used by the water department to chlorinate the water, so I just fill them up with water so they become chlorinated water stored in these barrels, just as, you know, having water. But in any case, that would be potable water for me, but that's not it's definitely not luggable. So anyway, that's some of the things I receive. So in any case, I would say that for the listeners, it'd be good to realize that they are sending little messages that are directed toward, you know, our own benefit if we just, you know, pay attention, and there's some detail involved. You get the idea, Z-Man?
Yes, I do. I especially with the water and moving it around, it's becoming a worldwide issue.
Yeah.
I heard a statistic, I think it's accurate, that 40% of all the water used in the world goes to grow food. And we drink or, you know, do whatever else with the other 60%. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I think in America, without getting to, you know, it's talking about just one region, you know, the changes of the, whether water goes to Las Vegas or water goes to strawberries in the California basin there. You know, I think we're going to have to, unless we come up with better ways to clean water less expensively, and we can push weather around to drought-ridden areas of the world, water's going to be one of the big issues of this century.
Right now, you know, there's too much water flooding, you know, in Southeast Asia. There's complaints coming out of Southeast Asia from people, you know, that I know there, and that they're very worried in, you know, Cambodia. It's very worried with the floods coming into areas which really do not flood often. And, of course, the famous one is right there in Thailand. Bangkok, Thailand, which is right along a river, and basically a lot of Thailand in that area is kind of a Venice of the Southeast Asia, so those areas are just really overwhelmed by flooding, so there's too much water. So you got too much or too little, so this is a kind of imbalance that is happening, and apparently with this information, it may be too little in the future, in the near future, perhaps, and with the idea of it being luggable, not like what I've got, you know, something that isn't I can't just pick up a 55-gallon drum of water. My storage supplies have to be changed around now, and I do take these little tips seriously. And what happened to me? And one of the times in which I received something like this, I received concerning economic things, and it was how in 19, I was using kind of like a forecasting tool, looking at tourist forecasting and seeing where the intensity or the tourism would direct whether the economy is going forward or backwards. And then it went forward, and then it showed me all of a sudden all these tourists are walking on the beach, all of a sudden started walking backwards, and then all of a sudden they turned into, their clothes turned into like roaring 20s kind of, so whatever, you know. I said, oh, well, you're telling me it's, you know, this can turn around. And of course we had a crash at the time, so, you know, up on your toes. But what had happened was I had taken some heat toward that statement and moved some of my investments out of the market and others into a protective position. And the flash crash happened pretty close, you know, within a week or two. So I do take it serious enough to do something about it when they do send me some of these types of visions or images, especially visions when they're inactive. So, and I'm just sharing them as they come along. So they do come true. It's not necessarily, I'm not using a type of remote viewing or using that technique. Remote viewing I can do, but it's accuracy is okay, but when I have something that is given to me without requesting it, then I take note of it much more sharply, because it's something I didn't really try to look for. They're just throwing me a favor. And, you know, I've had pretty serious favors coming from the Celestials in their interaction with me, as well as those surrounding me have benefited. So anyway, I pass this along, so you can take and do with it what you want.
And if you want to, listeners, send us an email. We'll read it on the air. We've got a couple that have come in right away. I like this one, so it's kind of lighthearted. I'll put it at the start, and it's not signed, so I'm not being rude. But it says, hey, Michael, aren't the Celestials telling you to head to the mainland?
Well, it hasn't given me that indication. And it could be, you know, put in a more direct sense if they wanted me to move off the island. However, I'm looking at the location of the Hawaiian Islands as one of the better places to be if you are an island. And the entire Pacific Ocean's basin, that's pretty much in the center of it, and of the active fault zones, they're mild. They don't tend to be extremely large, but that could very well be a kind of warning, but it hasn't come to the point where, oh, you better pick up and move. I've been you know, monitoring that idea for a long time, ever since I really become much more aware of the changes that are happening around the globe, places that do not have earthquakes or have had earthquakes are getting them. Well, Turkey's pretty seriously. So some of their buildings are just so poorly built, it just came right on down, and it's sad. You know, and they're really a nice group of people over there. Their culture over there, I blended in with. I try to absorb it as much as I can, and it's, you know, they're Islamic, but they're, you know, a great bunch of people, and I'm really sorry that they had that earthquake, but it did come through, and I expect more, and I think there's more to come, and although they've sent me some spots on a map which shows high altitude, I'm not sure what they mean by that yet.
You know, in all seriousness, if the crap hit the fan, I'm not so sure that being on Maui or the other islands wouldn't be an advantage. You know, it doesn't snow there, there's no drought there. There seems to be an ample amount of food and fishing you could do, a tropical climate for, you know, growing food. as opposed to what will degenerate into Lord knows what among our cities and urban areas.
You need water.
Yeah, when it came down to cities and urban areas, I did, have another vision years ago. It was a couple of years ago, I believe, that showed young people just simply walking out of the cities. And it's pretty much happening. They're just like, they're not setting up and looking for other opportunities in other domains and locations where, because of the economy, things have changed. And some of them are just, put in on a backpack, just like how I saw in the vision, and they're walking away. And this is happening. So again, sometimes they give me warning, and not necessarily like prophetic, maybe like what's going to happen, and it will absolutely happen to everybody. It's sort of like it's more like you will see these things happening. And it, again, most of these things are pointing toward having to be fulfilled in order that the celestials themselves will have that grand showing of themselves. In other words, sort of like a armada of ships that will make, I believe, the news. They will be showing themselves in great numbers, and I know very well that the landing bay in the New Jerusalem was able to hold a tremendous number of ships, but when I was there, it was more or less empty. It didn't have the massive numbers that are actually coming in and filling up the place. And, of course, I also wondered about those that are coming in and if they do visit the planet. And the answer I received was, of course, they come and visit the planet, our planet, Urantia. It's almost like a tourist thing with them. Since they've come all this way.
It's like going to the zoo.
Not really like the zoo, actually. Yeah, similar in a sense, yeah.
Tony Kaye, he's in the studio right now, and he was trying to make a comment. I accidentally cut his mic. He was trying to make the comment that you absolutely need water, and you know that in that information, you talk about water with a handle. Well, you may have to leave where you are, and you could live for weeks without food, but you can only live for days without water.
That's absolutely true. And don't know why, but it's something that I have to, like I say, I personally have to correct that. I've got to have containers that got handles on them and can carry them. You can't carry, like I said, 55-gallon drums. Oh, yeah, I can pack them in my car, but what? All of a sudden, maybe you can't use the cars or for whatever reason. Could it be a very strong electromagnetic wave? And a very powerful electromagnetic pulse or wave that comes through that can knock out your car and it can render it temporarily or permanently disabled. Walking to do usually. And that also reminds me that we should put something in your car also to have it available in your vehicle as part of its emergency supply.
Emergency kit of, they make them for road hazards, but they don't usually have water in them maybe some high protein bars of some sort that might be able to sustain you for several days.
I don't know about several days, but yeah, I guess it would be several days. But it's in where I live in Hawaii. I mean, it's you can run around the island in a day and a half, so it's not that much. But there's a tremendous amount of untapped resources over here that, because of the changes in the way our economy is set up, we, our farmland is relatively left fallow, and course, you got gigantic sugar farms, actually plantation, and things like that that are there. When it comes down to the rest of the world, there's all kinds of problems that are happening all over the world, and it seems to be practical advice. Yeah.
Well, now something that was unusual. Last night, which would be what, October 24th, 2011, the Aurora Borealis was visible in northeastern Ohio. That is, I'm in my 50s, and it's never happened in my lifetime that I know of. Now, we're 60 miles south of Cleveland. When you get up there, it's Lake Erie, so it's flat, and you can see a long way, at low angles. But it was a sensation around northeastern Ohio last night. Again, I didn't see it personally, but it was all over the place, and people are actually driving as far as they could up to the north coast to see these things. And, of course, that we're talking about a mass coronal or a coronal ejection. I wouldn't consider it a mass coronal, but isn't the Aurora Borealis caused by the solar wind and ejections from the sun?
Definitely. It is an interaction, we say, in our magnetosphere and the various kinds of charged particles, and there are many different kinds. But basically, these are particles that have a tendency to be able to ionize or charge the atmosphere to the point of having a kind of luminous appearance that is, typical of the aurora. But I did see the aurora borealis, but that was in Alaska. And they said, well, even there, it was a treat. They said, this is a treat, for you to see it, because they don't know. And when I did see it, it wasn't, like an everyday experience in Alaska. So, way over into the lower latitudes where you're at, that's unusual. And that means that the radiation or the charge particles from the sun are traveling and not following the normal deflection pattern, and are moving, and because of that, it's telling me that the magnetosphere may not be as strong as it used to be, in terms of just fending off the type of assault of charged particles. And when they get south, you just have an indication that there is also, it could very well be that there is some variances in the strength of the magnetic dipole. The magnetic dipole has essentially dipole, meaning that it is got a north and a south pole. And we have multiple north and south poles. It's one of the characteristics of the sun. The sun is boiling with many, many north-south poles all over the place. And these form many times the sunspots. Our planet has, for a long time, been noted as having relatively new south poles and north poles that are, out of place, you might say. And that may be a type of indicator that we've got a possible polar excursion or polar shift happening right now.
Well, just to be accurate, the northern lights have been seen in Ohio in my lifetime. I've never seen them personally, but it's extremely rare occasion because I believe of what you just said, Michael, that they would get this far. These particles had to be either passing through a weakened field or they were pretty strong.
Yeah, exactly that. And the measurements that have been made by our multiple, and there's an interesting thing here. is that NASA is very interested and has taken very seriously space weather. They're no longer not worrying about space weather. They're very much interested in space weather, and we've got so many ways in which we are observing the sun because of the seriousness of what can happen and what is predicted. You know, it's a matter of time when it will happen that it will be causing some pretty serious damage to our, you know, our planetary way of life, our normal way of life, interrupted pretty seriously.
We've got some emails. Before I get to that, one has come in that's, well, actually, I'm going to change my mind. I sound like a scatterbrain here. We'll leave that go because that'll take us in an entirely different direction. So let's go to this email I clicked on the wrong one. It's from Nadim, and it reads, Michael, I found this video on YouTube about a trader on BBC that talks about an upcoming market crash. Sounds about right on the timeline, if you ask me. Michael, you did mention that the crash that happened in 2008 was just like the first one, and that he received information in a dream that another bigger, scarier one would happen, meaning you. I have to look over the shows to find out exactly what Michael said, but this is as close to my memory as it gets me. Your comments, Michael.
Well, yeah, I did mention some things concerning the movement and change, but that was after the big crash in 2008. And prior to that was an overall picture of what was being set up in terms of the United States losing its position as in terms of the world reserve currency, disrupting the economy to the point which it has an effect of, that comes from the oil industry and all of that. But one of the things that I have been pressured about was in terms of the next big crash, it will be preceded by an insanely large wave of speculation. In other words, there will be a great up in the market before the big one comes down, and it will come down hard. It's almost like right now, if you look at what's happening in the market, the shifts are moving money in and out of the market extremely fast and moving the averages up in relatively quick periods, both ways, up and down. But once there will be a insanely large move up that will cause many people to jump in at the wrong time, and it will end up in a devastating downhill, and that's what I'm looking forward into. I'm not looking back as it being the future. I mean, in the past, something that happened in the past, it's going to be worse than anything that has ever happened before. And right now, the market is far too tame for anything to be too serious, because along with the movement in the market, there's a great, gigantic amount of money out there that is just waiting to be put to work, and it's like more than half of the money in the world is just sitting idle. It's not, you know, being put to work. And once that gets engaged, it's gonna be crazy, and then it'll come the big dump because of some very serious problem that will immediately trigger an extremely fast downhill. So that's what I'm looking toward, and this is something that I can't really time, and terrible things like that time. And again, you know, I just know that that's something that will happen.
Well, my spies tell me, and we've mentioned this on other broadcasts, at least here in America, and you know most of the banking of the world goes through Manhattan and Wall Street, that the word went out when their party didn't win, the word went out, just relax for a while. Don't do anything. Don't expand your business. Don't hire any people. We're going to let this simmer and smolder, and in 4 years we'll clean house, we'll get the White House back, and then we'll all be back on Easy Street. You know, I just think what you will, folks. I think that's the political climate. The people with the money are deliberately not doing anything. It benefits them, and it benefits the rich and wealthy and powerful. All right, let's change topics entirely with an email. Michael, stop me if I read this last week. A lot of times I'll read the emails before the show, and then I forget whether I actually read it on the show or not. This comes to us from Tony, and it reads, is the world of physics catching up? Recently, the particle accelerator community at CERN announced that tiny particles called neutrinos seem to travel very fast, very slightly fast, is that right? Okay, than the speed of light in an experiment that they have repeated 15,000 times over 3 years. They've opened this up for the global scientific community to investigate because, of course, it's true. If it's true, then it violates Einstein's theory of relativity, which means we finally need to update our theories of the universe and accept what we currently have is wrong, or at least not complete. In addition, this would mean that faster-than-light space travel would also then need to be accepted as a possibility by our scientists. Some scientists have even suggested that if this is really happening, perhaps the neutrinos are using the extra dimensions to do this. Mind you, another physicist has said he'll eat his boxer shorts on live television if neutrinos really can outpace light. I'll suggest a lightweight pair in a good sauce. Your comments.
That's what you just said is exactly what is happening. And they are discovering it and finding it very difficult. You know, the idea of debunking, the concept of debunking is to keep safe what one has in place. Usually it's because of financial grants and things like that that help fund a person's livelihood. And when it comes down to Einstein, he's dead, and he could care less, actually, because he discovered already in the transition from light, from moving out of his physical body into another domain and a dimension, that indeed he was in error. Because, yes, they're discovering trans-dimensional displacement in terms of timing. And this is something that the Celestials do on a regular basis. And it was very hard for me to get a grip on because of just simply feeling the celestial domain or the domain in which we live as being exactly what we experience here because our physicality is primarily locked in to our dimensional plane. However, there's so much to show that it isn't solidly locked in. There's a lot of movement beyond the physical limitations of our space, and because of that, there's so many other hints. And of course, Einstein himself did relate to the concept of spooky action at a distance. This is his concept in which he did take a stab at it, but did not want to violate the concept of the speed of light. The idea was that by disturbing one particle in one place, it would also disturb something in another place. And that showed that both particles were somehow interrelated or connected, even if they were what seemed to be totally disconnected. But what they didn't have the capability of was timing the interaction. That's what we have today. Much more accurate timing devices that can be synchronized, and finding out that there's more to that. and it will be verified repeatedly, and we'll have to not just rewrite the, you know, our textbook ideas, but understand it more toward the benefit of the entire human race. And it is also something that is timed because of the celestials themselves knowing that we will discover that. It will come to a point we will discover that. And when we do, the universe, the domain, the key that holds us here will become a part of our tools. We essentially will have another key to unlock more. And their way of, you know, holding us into our domain, our expansion and our growing, you might say, growing up as a planetary people toward becoming part of the celestial community, can no longer be trusted. In other words, we will find a way to move out of it, and they know that. So it's not to bar us from it. It's to time their mix, their, you know, basically coming out and showing the world that we are part of a much greater. And I think most of the people are you know, aware of that. It's just that we have to live our lives. And this is one of the things they respect entirely for us, that they consider it very important that we live our lives out, and we gain and we learn through experience and write into our soul consciousness that transportable, morancho transportable, implantable soul that we have into eternal destiny. And an individual's life experience has a lot to do with shaping character and testing character and purifying character. So that's what they're all very much leaving out of their interaction. They don't want to tweak us all the time. We do the tweaking for ourselves, you know, through free choice. And inevitably, that is what really will make us a higher and more royal, regal people.
Anyway. What was the name of, when you were describing Einstein's theory that particles across the universe can affect each other, what did he call that?
Well, his term, his idea was this, it was called, he called it spooky action at a distance.
That's right. I couldn't think of the term spooky,
action. Spooky action at a distance.
But can you imagine?
Another way of describing it, and I think it was, let's see, oh, I forgot the exact wording of it, but I'm sorry. But I like Einstein's idea of spooky, because it is spooky. And all.
Right. I mean, I think that's that word. I mean, maybe today he would say, because it's funky. You know, it's like, I don't have any idea, so we're just going to call it this. But I think that's, it's perfect, of course. It's something he couldn't explain. We still can't explain it, so it's spooky. I was told by a medium who was channeling a dead person through him, when I asked the question, can anything go faster than light? This person said, yes, thought can go faster than light. First of all, do you think thought can go faster than light?
Thought can go faster than light.
Well, then, yeah. Let me ask the next. Okay, if we accept that as a premise, then if you're a being of light, and you can these celestial beings think themselves from place to place?
Oh, that's one good way of putting it, because it almost is that in their technology. That is something that I experienced, because from Mars back to Earth, it was interesting, you know, they, my request was, could we pass, you know, could I take a look at Mars on the way back to Earth? And after a little bit of discussion, they said, okay. Well, anyway, at Mars, I was told to go and, you know, there was like a dome, or quite a large dome, which became absolutely transparent, and I could see the sun, which from Mars looks like an extremely bright star, and so it's easy to find, the brightest one around, and Earth. It said, find Earth, find Earth, and I just pointed it out right away, because it's another star, a blue-colored star, and I said, I think it's right there, and they said, oh, you got it right. And they said, okay, well, we'll let you go home. We let you, the exact term was, well, I don't know the exact term, but the idea was they let me take it back. So what I did was, I said, I don't know how to drive this spaceship, you know, kind of an idea. And said, it doesn't matter, just put your hands here. And I said, my hands don't look like those impressions. And he said, don't worry, just put them on top of those, where those impressions are that look like our hands. And they're talking about his hands, which he had the more, the commander, I guess, of the ship. He had more of a, what is kind of classified as a Zeta type, you know, appearance.
How many fingers did they have?
He had five fingers, long though, and long, thin fingers, and yeah, and what I did note was that there was room for six fingers on there. Yeah. So anyway, and I just put my hand on there as far as the control pad. So in other words, he may have had five fingers, but others have six, so they made it that way.
Gotcha.
Anyway, then I put my hand on there, and at the idea of moving at the interface was so, you know, we in the computer world today like the idea of intuitive interface. Well, I tell you what it is. It was highly intuitive. All I had to do was want to be where I wanted to be, which was back to planet Earth, and boom, we were there. So the trans-dimensional displacement of moving from Mars to planet Earth was almost immediately, but the dome went black. I mean, I couldn't see out of it as soon as that happened. So... And then they took over and showed me how well I did, and they said, you did real good. Didn't crash.
Because if not, we put you out the airlock.
Yeah. But it was amazing because it's sort of like it's in you. It's in you to be able to interface their craft. I wouldn't call it a craft, because that means it was made in the way we would make a craft with nuts and bolts and rivets. That's not it at all. But anyway, it had that type of a feel, which is at the speed of thought.
Our next question, I'm going to abbreviate it. It's a little long, but basically what it boils down to, it comes from a new listener who's also named Tony, with a different last name, who would like to know about your wife and if basically she experiences the same things you do.
My wife has, interestingly, a kind of a purposeful rejection of getting involved too much with her experiences with Tan, and especially Tan. Not because it was negative, but because, for her life, to go and live her life. It's not so important because it was something that has been in place between, not only between, but in both of us, is that we go out and purposefully live as normal a life as possible. And she doesn't necessarily rely on any of the information or what was exchanged with Tan and her, except to note that, she had a long conversation with him. There was a point in which he literally pushed her away. There's in the ship toward the center, close to that, actually down a little bit lower and deeper inside, there's like a central beam of light that activates as you move. It's like right in the middle. Well, anyway, she looked into it, looked down into it, and immediately pushed her back, and then it activated, and this beam of power or light came through. So that's one thing she said. I think that might have been a little bit of traumatic experience, so that, you know, that's something she remembered, besides having kind of long discussions with Tan, who is an intellectual, and my wife is also, an intellectual. Yes. She's smarter than I am. When her IQ, she's like, 150, 60, or something like that, way up there. Anyway.
Okay. Dear Michael, in the Christian world, God descended from heaven, inhabited a human body for 30-some years, then ascended to heaven. Other branches of the Christian faith believe Jesus was born a human and evolved into a God. Which is your opinion, and does it matter? Signed, P.T.
Actually, in terms of what actually happened, was sort of a bit of both. But in reality, it was never done before. It was something very new to happen. And essentially, being born into a mortal human body required essentially dumbing down because of the interface that the human body possesses. Essentially, he was as much human as a human being that the human beings that he was walking with, and this was essentially like I would say a dumbing down. He did do that. Now, did he ascend up or become more higher during that life period? Actually, he broke through and found that the human body was capable of much more. Because of that experience, we are gifted with all being able to interface with divinity, a thought adjuster. That's part of the royalty concept in which they assign to us. They look upon celestials, they look upon us as royalty, because having that thought adjuster or divine fractal is part of what happened out of that. Another thing that happened was quite the opposite, was that the infinite divinity that he possessed was able to shed part of that in order to attain mortality. And that is something that he provided higher ups a way to become mortal, to essentially be able to ascend higher than their particular plane. Now, people are wondering why these supposed Zetas or whatever Greys are thinking about doing, Are they trying to make human, hybrid, this idea? Well, there's a lot of that idea, concept going on with them, but it's for a purpose on realizing that through the mortality of the human being becoming from being higher than us, perhaps, there are so many different ways in which you could consider other celestials as higher than us, but by coming down to our level and then going back up, they actually pass the point in which they were. In other words, they follow the path toward higher ascension only by being able to descend first. And that required requires becoming mortal. Now, the movies and all of that make them look like they got cursed, but actually, they actually try and vie that they may first, if possible, attain this higher ascension process by escorting various human beings up successfully to a higher, a more successful domain in celestial consciousness. And in this escorting of human beings, and you know, there could be rescue, like my wife was rescued going down the river, could have smashed her head in a rock, but they pulled her out and rescued her. But in that interaction, they may attain enough mortal life experience to be able to ascend higher, where others will actually find what they consider favor to become mortal themselves and follow the path of the universe creator, Son, more commonly known as Jesus Christ. So this is the complete picture. Well, not the really totally complete, because in order to get the really complete, you got to live through a lot of the understanding. Anyway, so that's a better idea, perhaps a way of explaining it than I ever received through my studies in biblical studies. Yeah.
What would that be, the Coptics or the Gnostics who believe that? I kind of like that idea there for a minute. I'm thinking, if I understand the emailer, that we talk about this divine fractal that we're all born with, and what if Jesus was the first human being to get it to work?
Well, a little correction there. We're not all born with it. We are able to interface with it, and the divine fractal only arrives. Remember, yours arrived in a certain point in your life where you saw the one without, like, you know, looked like he had glowing white.
Yes.
Likeness, and it looked like a light person.
Yes. I didn't realize that was the point that it, as you say, arrived.
Yeah, that was the point, yeah.
Really? Huh.
So it's later, you're not an adult when it happens, but you generally are young and a child, and you're just learning about right and wrong and really feeling that there's got to be, you know, right and wrong and things like that.
Well, it's kind of a neat thought that, you know, of course, the Christian faith teaches that Jesus was divine and existed before his life on earth. So that's kind of a direct conflict with that other way of thinking. Well, all right, Zochi 2012, I'll apologize. We probably won't have time for both of your questions. We're running out of, we're going to have to get about a minute to answer this one, which will be impossible. And here it is. Dear Michael, please tell us how the last 12 hours of Christ are the same as the timeline of the Mayan calendar from 2000 to 2012.
Oh, the progression of the life of Christ through those last 12 hours.
It says how the last 12 hours of Christ, right, the last 12 hours is the same timeline as the Mayan calendar from 2000 to 2012.
Well, you're looking at it in terms of the same timeline. Was actually, yes, it's the same timeline. But if you're looking also at its analogies, Christ going through that and bearing it, and the human race going through it in a similar sense toward a change in consciousness. A much great suffering and this and that, and that is very, very close. You're kind of drawing a very interesting parallel there.
Well, and listeners, we are just down to like our last 90 seconds, and I want to make sure in the closing moments that I get to say what I say as we close every program. Michael does this broadcast because he told his celestial friends that he would. He just is doing what he said he would do. It's that simple. Michael does not get paid. We don't pay Michael. Michael has nothing to sell. We will not accept any commercial advertisers on this broadcast. Artist First loses money on every single broadcast. And we're happy to do so. And we just want to say this publicly on every broadcast, in case you are a first-time listener. We're doing this for what we think are the right reasons. And Michael, we thank you, as always, from all of our listeners and staff at Artist First. Thank you so much for your time.
You're certainly welcome, and the Celestials themselves will thank you. And also, Celestials did promise that they would not let me do that alone. So there's a lot of interjection and assistance that is afforded in this program from the Celestials, because they promised me they would not leave me without help. They would help.
Well, they haven't let us down so far, and we appreciate all the wisdom and the fact that they'll even talk to us at all. We are just completely dumbfounded and thrilled that they allow us to be one of the platforms to get this information out. Well, Michael, again, thank you very much. CBS News is going to happen in about 10 seconds. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Michael, we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye-bye and aloha.